Are you a parent that is concerned that your child is showing signs or even red flags of narcissistic behaviors? Are you looking for answers and don't know where to turn? Sometimes we see behaviors and we dismiss them as they're just teenagers. They're learning, they're growing up, they're learning to be people. We dismiss these behaviors and we oughtn't not to. So today, my guest is Dr. Babita Spinelli. She is a therapist in New York City, New Jersey, and in Florida. And she and I are going to have a great conversation about how do you know? What do you do? And can you save them with love? These are the questions that parents have when they face this really painful, just even saying it out loud. I think my child is turning into a narcissist. It's scary. So let's take a little bit of the mystification of this away and talk with Babita today. Thank you so much for joining me, Babita. I'm so excited to have you back.
Oh, thank you, Tracy. Me too.
Great. Well, today our topic is going to talk about what does a parent do when they suspect that their child has narcissistic tendencies? Where do we start?
Yeah, that is such a hot and powerful topic. I know it's been coming up, for you. It's been coming up when I work with parents and families and adolescents. So I think there's a lot out there to talk about.
Yeah, I know that parents have similar red flags. So when you have a red flag that your child might be lying excessively, and I know this doesn't, all kids lie. Did you steal the third cookie, right? It's not that level of lying. What kind of things might a parent be suspicious of if the child is lying to them all the time? What should they look for?
Well, I think if we look generally and put that into the scope of the red flags, when we see that it's persistent lying, so this is something that's going on continuously, but the next layer is that there isn't any guilt around it, that it's always about their needs and their entitlement to lie. So if you look at normal child behavior, yeah, stealing the cookie from the jar, having the piece of cake they shouldn't. But what usually tends to happen, there's guilt. They're like, they want to try and hide it. Those qualities and characteristics are not visible in that child. That's a red flag. I can continue on with some other very powerful red flags as well.
Yeah, let's talk about them.
Yeah, so I mean, that's like one example and noticing that. And I bring this in the context of sometimes what ends up being challenging for a parent is what is sort of, as you're saying, normal child behavior and child development. And then when do you feel like it's narcissistic behavior that's coming out?
Right.
And this is also why clinicians have a hard time and are challenged by actually articulating there's NPD here or there's some narcissistic issues here, because we have your normal like toddler or middle school kid that has things like you said, the lies. Then you have like a teenager going through selfish behavior. But some of the red flags are, for example, let's say empathy. If you find that your child does not display any empathy for someone else's situation and is very much about their own, is very much into their own self-subjective experience, they don't feel sorry for someone that is that something has happened to, they don't show any remorse, they don't seem to be sincere or sensitive, and it's persistent. This is a red flag.
Okay, so the empathy thing, and I was talking with someone yesterday about, we all talk, oh, they don't show empathy, but an example of not showing empathy would be, you lie, get your sibling in trouble, and you just don't care. It's it means nothing, right? What other kinds of this proof of empathy? Because little kids and medium kids and teenagers all have their growth normal patterns. But what is the difference that they can just go, oh, I get it?
Well, when the lack of empathy is demonstrated in aggressive behavior and that there isn't any remorse about it, that there's almost as if there's an entitlement to what they did and that they really don't care. So when it's, sometimes we see it in the form of bullying.
Oh, yeah.
And if there's persistent bullying, that is a red flag.
Okay.
Because they're not showing empathy, let's say on the schoolyard for these other kids, they're not showing empathy to their other classmates. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is pretty powerful. What's interesting in that space is oftentimes what might happen is that a parent may not see it as being as serious. And the school may not see it as being as serious. And then it ends up perpetuating. And that's a pretty strong red flag of a lack of empathy, the bullying example.
Yeah, that's really good. Because that's definitely something that we can see. That's right there. If they're getting a call from school that your kid is bullying kids in the playground, this is the note to kind of pay attention to it and really look further.
Yes. Or a lack of empathy is when you take, for example, mean girls or mean boys to the next level. So that it's continuous and perpetual, but they don't at any time feel bad for the other person.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a really good one. I know that they can hurt their siblings too.
Yes. It's very difficult if you have a situation where one child is showing narcissistic traits and another child is not and ends up being sort of a victim of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That can sometimes play out in a situation where that's happened with the parents. That you might have a parent who's narcissistic and one isn't, it plays out in the sibling relationship.
Oh, wow. That makes sense. And that's a really good thing to look for. I heard that children, their brains don't finish developing till they're 25. So is there something that, can a parent, they always ask, can they change it? You know, they're still in the 14, 15. Can they make a difference to move this person away from that sort of tendency?
Yes. Yes, they can. So, and I think I'll kind of describe it in the context of some more red flags that can come up and then how a parent can also handle it.
Good.
So some additional red flags would be if a child is preoccupied with their own needs getting met consistently in all shapes or forms. Mm-hmm. If a child shows a self-value that is an extreme. For example, they are so competitive out even on the baseball field or football field that it's all about their own performance and not about the team. It's all about themselves. So their egos are very large. Okay. And they value themselves to more than anyone around them or any of the kids they hang out with or any of their teammates.
Are their egos fragile?
Sometimes it is because the ego is fragile, that their self-esteem is so low that they actually choose then the grandiosity to cover up the low self-value.
Wow, that makes sense.
And then they need those things to actually build them up so we don't have a balance. It's very extreme. It's a very extreme ego and a very extreme low self-esteem that then actually perpetuates the ego.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So what can parents do? I think the first part is even though there isn't full development of 25, early on, the first thing I would say, I have kind of a huge list. So the first thing I would say is modeling empathy. Pointing out to the child early on, as early as possible, even if you don't see any red flags, this is just sort of a baseline. what is empathic behavior? How do we see someone else's subjective experience? How do we notice what someone else's needs are? Mm-hmm. And moving them into that space of recognition. If the child is showing the red flags, you point out, do you understand? Can you see what you did to, you know, James or anyone else? Mm-hmm. Do you understand what it means to take that cookie? Mm-hmm. If you noticed how, and then you could point to a neighbor, did you notice how the neighbor felt like they wanted to help the other neighbor mow their lawn? You know, demonstrate what empathy means to and point it out. So that's the first thing, the modeling.
But yeah.
Then we end up going into a space of unconditional love. Now, the question is can you really like love your child out of being a narcissist? I would say in a lot of ways early on, and if you do it consistently, yes. Because often, are you going to?
Yeah,
I'm going to love it out of you. And it goes beyond just saying, I love you. What it is the words and the actions, but it should not be connected to performance and self-worth. What sometimes can happen is parents might translate, and their intentions may be good, you know, a lot of the love of when someone has done something well. Oh, I just love you. I'm so proud of you. You did this. Look at him go in that game. Oh, honey, I love you. But what's happening is it's attached to performance. It's attached to something they did versus just being loving and unconditional love. I love you because you're my child.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
So that is something that is super significant. And showing that love and that kind of connects to praise is praise selectively. Your child is not perfect or the best, even though as parents, sometimes we feel that they are, and sometimes mm-hmm. we feel that they're not. But I don't know if you've ever noticed, ever been in a situation where one parent is constantly praising their own child.
Yes.
And they think that, right? And there's some parents that are like, oh my God. And then there's some parents that are like, wow, look at what they think of their child. What happens there is the child takes that in and they absorb it and they have become grandiose. There's a grandiosity to them. Mm-hmm. They're used to all of the praise happening all the time.
Right.
And then they need it.
It's a false self too. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, in the teeny tiny soccer teams, it didn't matter if you lost all year long, you got a trophy, right? They were awarded for not really achieving anything. I mean, they're peewees or whatever, but it gives them a false self so that when they actually get into somewhere where it's not the peewee soccer league and they lose, it seems to, you know, crush them even more because they've got this self grandiose thing. Like, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm going to get a trophy. I'm special. You know, I think if I have that right? Is it sort of that same kind of thing?
Yes. Yes, it is. And that's a great example. And then you see that if that continues, we know in the narcissistic adult, there's this constant need for appreciation. There's this constant need for validation. And if they don't get it, they get angry. And that's another sign of a narcissistic child. Does the child get angry if you're constantly not praising them? Are they throwing a tantrum if they don't get what they want? Mm-hmm. We're not talking about the terrible twos. You know, we're talking about like it's constant and it goes into other stages in childhood of, you know, adolescents, teenagers, preteen.
Mm-hmm. Before you get into that flag, since you just asked about that one, or you talked about that, the age, is there an age that, you know, we're talking terrible twos, we're not going to say you're showing narcissistic tendencies, I don't know. Is there an age where they could say this is normal behavior or notice it really as early? How early can they notice it? What should they look for in terms of that?
Well, it's interesting. There's so much different research on it, but some data says the best time is about 3 to 4 years prior to when you're entering the teenage years.
Okay. All right.
This is where, from my perspective, you can notice it even earlier than that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would say start, especially because if you notice now, the maturity level has changed because of what kids are exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. Yes. So, you know, it's around age 6, 7,
mm-hmm.
You can start to pick up the red flags.
Wow. That's really helpful to know. Thank you. I know you have another red flag, so go ahead with that one.
Oh, sure. So I think the other piece of it is when we get to a piece around aggression and boundaries, the red flag is if the child continues to push those boundaries in a very aggressive way, and it does connect to like the part about the empathy also.
Mm-hmm.
But the piece that's important is if the parent never sets the consequence or the boundary.
Right.
And sometimes when that becomes difficult, is, for example, when you have two divorced parents and there might be guilt around the divorce, or they might have different sets of rules, and somewhere the boundaries and the consequences get lost and the child continues and continues without any consequence or ownership or accountability.
Wow, that makes sense. Yeah, I could see that where the dueling co-parenting rules get blurred, and that's what you do at daddy's house, or you can do that at mommy's house. You're not doing that at my house. And then they lose the boundary at the other house. It can't be enforced if it's not enforced by both. And during a co-parenting situation, very often the rules get blurred and the kid is just either left without them, or in this case could take advantage of not ever really living up to those boundaries.
Exactly. And then it continues on in their life, mm-hmm. where they become the narcissistic adult. And they mm-hmm. don't know, they don't set their own boundaries. They don't know any consequences to their behavior. And they continued. Mm-hmm. And it kind of brings into that whole sense of entitlement. And entitlement is a pretty huge thing. And I find, and I don't know, Tracy, if you have found this, but I found in my work, the entitlement part around narcissism in adolescents and teens has become quite powerful because of what's happening with social media.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of comparisons and there's a lot of sort of immediate satisfaction, yeah. and attachment to that, mm-hmm. and attachment to things. And so what ends up happening is it feeds the burgeoning of a narcissistic quality.
Do you think that the social media interaction that the kids are exposed to today, it helps define them in some ways? Like, I'm popular, I got 100 likes, or it can defeat their deflate their bubble that, you know, the popular girl is getting 1,000 likes and nobody likes mine. I mean, there's almost a competition on the social media. So can that play a part in them if they are always the one like getting the likes, getting the things? Can that build up their self-esteem in a false way?
Yes, I can say that it can. And it's not as healthy. And so if something ends up happening that's to another extreme, it kind of creates the exact opposite effect. And if there is a child with narcissistic traits, they will continue to turn to that to feed the narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
So if a boundary isn't set around that, or it's not taught, this is where we have the teachable moments around that.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing a parent can do, is to say, to what extent is the social media now an impact as I see these narcissistic traits in my child? How do I set the boundary about that? And also, how do I spend some time describing and explaining and teaching how this can impact them,
mm-hmm.
in the language of an adolescent or a teen?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. How would a parent explain that? Can you give us an example?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Probably it would be around describing that it really is, a lot of it is not really realistic. It's always the social media. It's a real world, but it's a bit of a virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
And to sort of describe that it's their own inner being, and that what's happening in social media is we're constantly making comparisons. but to say you are who you are, and just to take the social media as something that can be of interest, that you can engage in, but to remember that not all of this is always necessarily real. You have what's real inside of you.
Right.
But that you know, that part takes, I think, some work.
Yeah, I would think, especially in the times we're in, because they're on it. You know, now 9-year-olds are on Instagram, and you know, it just puts them into a place where they can feed that narcissistic "I need attention" factor. But I think being in social media my whole career, the last 10 years or so, I think it creates such a false blanket, if you would, that isn't necessarily real. And yet the child is like, no, I have all these fans and they're waiting for my next picture of me, you know, and it just makes kids have this this false sense of self, which I think if they're tending towards all of this narcissist behavior, it's feeding the goblin that needs all this attention, and it's going to make them, when they get into a relationship, need that twice as much because they're used to all this coming from social media and strangers telling them they're cute. And then they get into a relationship, and if that person can't keep up that level of showing them how wonderful they are, they're going to be disappointed and things are going to happen, right?
Absolutely. And this is where it's pointing that out. I call it, try and incorporate what I call Sunday suppers in the house. Talk about it. Make them feel comfortable to say, this is what I saw on social media. This is what it made me feel like. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt defeated by this. So that when it's an open dialogue in the house, one, there isn't like a hiding about it, but two, it helps the child, especially all children, but the one if there's narcissistic traits, to share, and that you can begin to dialogue about that and to put it into perspective.
Yeah.
It's also where parents can model their own engagement in it if they see that this is what's the path that it's leading the child.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. What other red flags do you have for me?
The other part is the healthy self-esteem.
Okay.
And it goes back to something you pointed out around the extremes of either it's very low self-esteem or very extreme grandiosity. Mm-hmm. And the parents' role is, if they notice that, is to be able to recognize and balance out that self-esteem. So it could mean connecting to the child to find things that are healthy activities for them, mm-hmm. to help ground them. Right. It could be, again, talking about, you know, self-worth and self-esteem, that it's okay to like maybe not be good at some things and be great at some things, mm-hmm. you know, balancing all that out, because there's also a lot of pressure that takes place.
Right.
And if there's a burgeoning narcissist, they're going to take that pressure, and it's either going to cultivate a grandiose image and appearance and a self, or it's going to take them into another place. So we just want to balance it out.
Yeah. Well, what I hear from you in all of these flags, in every single possibility of showing signs of, is the parent's role in communicating and kind of guiding them and not giving them like the whole full rein to, you know, a lot of parents, when this starts to happen, they back away and they just go, I don't know what to do. And then the narcissist child is just, you know, flourishing in the background, doing what they want without any kind of guidance, without any, here's what empathy looks like, without actually saying something, or again, those boundaries and consequences. If parents don't set proper boundaries, which means that there's a consequence, the child is going to grow up without that guidance. And I think that's how they, you know, it's like putting Miracle-Gro on your child. If you ignore them, they're going to grow twice as big, right? And so talking to them seems to be the best steps. And educating yourself as a parent on on what you should be looking for and how to talk to. And I think going into counseling, even if the parent were to talk to someone like yourself or me and say, what should I look for? How should I handle this? Get the guidance so that you are a better parent, because we don't learn this. You just like get pregnant, have a baby. No one tells you what could happen if your child shows these kind of tendencies or has a personality disorder, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's hard for a parent to see it, and they might also end up dissociating from it. Mm-hmm. You know, they may not want to see it.
Yeah.
And also to be mindful that if you're in a relationship with a narcissist or you're divorcing a narcissist, it becomes that much harder. And so what's important is the communication, and that the awareness of what's taking place is so important. Also paying attention, what are my child's teachers should say? What are the counselors saying?
Right.
Sometimes that's discounted. Oh, okay, you know, that's what all teens do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, that's a typical thing for a middle schooler. Right. But sometimes it isn't. Mm-hmm. And if it keeps happening, you have to ask yourself that question.
Right.
Is this a developing narcissist? Are there narcissistic qualities here? This way also, I think if there's more education around this, which is why this is such an important topic, it helps to not develop the adult narcissist. Right. And we know there's a huge percentage of adult narcissists,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
In this world, that is then adds to the creation of all of the traumas that right. take place.
Right. And I know that, you know, if you're married to a narcissist and you're seeing these behaviors, and of course, divorce gets ugly. It just does. It doesn't matter if you're divorcing a narcissist, it brings out like some ugly stuff. But when you're child is being modeled after the narcissist, is it like a really bad thing? Because I'm saying it is, but to say you're just like your father, you're just like the mother. Like if a parent is then, instead of dealing with the child in a healthy way, they're just disclaiming them and going, you're just like your father, and then they put their hands up, which I think leads the child into, well, then I will be.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. The way that I would see that and perhaps can be approached is there is a perspective, and I agree with this, of pointing out if there is narcissistic behavior by someone else to show the child, this is what narcissistic behavior looks like. Mm-hmm. But perhaps the language that can be used is not in a punitive way, because what would end up happening is the child then absorbs thinking they are their father or their mother who's the narcissist, and that can have a whole other set of issues, right? Mm-hmm. They absorb that in and they feel bad. They feel like a bad person.
Right.
I would say perhaps frame it as, if you noticed that behavior that your father did, and that impact that it had on me or you or anyone else, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
We call that narcissistic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a teenager, you would understand that. But if it's like a middle schooler or younger, could you say, you know, that's not healthy behavior. We don't behave that way.
Right.
It's hurtful. It's painful. It's mean. It's aggressive. Right. You know, you can identify what it is and what it feels like. It feels hurtful to others, because the child needs to know there's another subjective experience here.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be a way to be able to frame it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, just when the parent is accusing the child of being just like their, you know, narcissistic parent, it makes them half bad. Like right there, the child is going, well, everything that's half, I'm half daddy, I'm half mommy, and you're saying they're terrible. Mm-hmm. And they take that on, and you know, whether they're narcissistic or not, this is a, you know, sadly something that I have heard stories of, that damages the child forever, because that inner self-love is now half hate, because you hate daddy or you hate mommy, and that's part of me. So to take it away from, you know, that it is part of you, half of daddy is you, but that these behaviors, it's not you, it's the behaviors we're disowning and saying are not good.
Tracy, that is so true and so powerful. I can't begin to tell you when I work with adolescents in that situation, the number of times that it's come up. Is that me? Is that my story? Am I like that? I'm like that, right? Mm-hmm. I do that because of that, right? So it's so true and so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where, as we're seeing the work, what you do, what I do, that it can be helpful, because getting that understanding, that objective barometer, mm-hmm. the recognition of a subjectivity, understanding what those behaviors mean, recognizing them and seeing it differently, gaining perspective, is very important to be able to help when you see a child that's a narcissist, to be able to balance it out, to be able to work with that individual.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many things. Raising a child, I think we need a book. I mean, I know there's how to like be pregnant, but there's not many books on, okay, now what? Or I guess I just didn't read them. I'm sure they're out there. So that was a silly statement. I just don't, you know, read those. But let's just summarize, what else can a parent do? We've taught them some of the things that they can look for. The red flags, but now that they're talking and having open dialogue, will therapy help? And at what point do you put a child that's showing these kind of behaviors in with a therapist? Mm-hmm.
If a parent finds that they're still struggling in, they've tried everything and they're still struggling, okay. Or they feel that they need some additional help, because often the parent-child relationship makes it difficult for a child maybe to take in, right. Or they don't feel like there's objectivity.
Yes.
Then going to therapy can be extremely helpful, because it's a safe place, mm-hmm. for that child to be able to fully share. It allows a therapist to also make an assessment of the spectrum.
Right.
Because for a parent, sometimes they're not sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and even though we're talking about it and they might read about it, sometimes there is that face-to-face interaction that can provide that assessment of, yes, this is, there's a lot there in terms of the narcissistic qualities.
Right.
The other part is in the therapeutic relationship, it helps that child to go into a deeper dive around what might be taking place for them, what might be eliciting these behaviors, mm-hmm. where this may be coming from, their lens on how they see the world, mm-hmm. and for the therapist to work through that with them and provide them with the tools that they need to be able to go beyond what's been happening and give them that kind of perspective, ways to cope, those tools, so they don't go down that rabbit hole and that understanding.
Right. Yeah. And so often, you know, the communication breaks down with your teenager and you could tell them the sky is blue and they're not going to listen to you, but an objective mm-hmm. person can say that is blue. And they'll be like, you know, my son used to have that happen all the time. I would be telling him, you know, don't go out without your coat on, whatever stupid thing it was. And he wouldn't listen to me. But then as soon as someone else said it, it was law. And I was like, wait a second, I've been saying that all for years. You know, and so I think, you know, we in a normal relationship, we have those breakdowns where the parent loses, I wouldn't say authority, but they're not listened to by the child at a certain age. They'll listen to others. And that's where the therapist comes in, where they're getting that professional opinion mm-hmm. that is going to guide them without it being, you know, mommy said this, I'm not going to listen to it. You know, you're kind of in a battle there.
That's so true. And in the way that it's framed in the therapeutic relationship, it's let's say they've done something that was very aggressive to others at school. Mm-hmm. And they come in and they're almost boastful about it, right? So we have the narcissistic, you know, teen in front of me kind of boastful about it, and I did, you know, I don't care, they deserved it, right? So then it's like, did you notice, tell me more about the fact that you think they deserved it. What made them deserve it? What is it about them? Did you notice what their reaction? You know, so you start to open them up to see something that they may not be seeing because they're stuck in the narcissism.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's awesome. Well, I have to say, I am so grateful that you have spent this time with us and that we have brought a little light to the parents who are wondering, how do I know? What do I do? And is there anything that I missed before we sign off?
I think we've covered it. I mean, there is a lot there.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing is that the parents are asking themselves that question. Mm-hmm. And really observing their child's behavior, mm-hmm. and that they are addressing it.
Right, right.
They're not just letting it go, because this is important, but a lot of times, unless things are falling into other kinds of categories, such as anxiety or depression, a parent may miss everything about the narcissistic qualities that are coming up. And NPD is significant.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, if we can get them on the right path early, you can change their future. And that's what we want when we put them in peewee soccer. So why wouldn't we want them to have emotionally balanced life? And by giving them the tools when they're younger, steering them in the right direction, when there is a direction that can take them to be more empathetic, to understand how others feel, and maybe not be as grandiose or tone down some of these types of behaviors. I think that's really important for a parent to know.
Completely. And recognizing that their unhealthy aggression is absolutely not okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know,
things like that. Making sure that those boundaries are there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, and I will have you back because you are brilliant and awesome, and I know you're in New York, New Jersey, and in Florida now, so we'll put all your information down below so people can find you, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Tracy. It was great to be on with you. I always love our dialogue, and thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you so much for joining me today and listening to Babita and I have a great conversation about what to do and how to identify if your child is showing narcissistic red flags and behaviors. There's hope for you, and you can turn this around. If you need more information, visit my website, narcissistabusesupport.com, and get out there and find some resources, and don't dismiss these behaviors. You can save them a lifetime of pain and heartache by being aware of it and being the guiding light that teaches them empathy. That's all I got. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for watching.